The commute from my home to the church is fairly straightforward. I exit my subdivision, turn left onto Highway 70, and I stay on that road until Highway 70 becomes West Main. And then there's the church. I haven't gotten lost yet. I do know that if I get to the statue of the Confederate general, I've gone too far. About halfway along this route from my home to the church, there is a marker that I notice each time that I pass it. And this marker designates that section of Highway 70 there, it's around Highway 109, as being part of the Trail of Tears. Now, the Trail of Tears marks an especially dark period in our nation's history. During the time of the Trail of Tears, approximately 60,000 Native Americans were forcibly relocated from their ancestral homelands in the southeastern United States and taken to the designated Indian Territory, which was west of the Mississippi River. These forced relocations were carried out by government authorities after the passage of the Indian Removal Act of 1830. Those who were removed from their homes were members of the Cherokee, Creek, Seminole, Chickasaw, and Choctaw nations. And that journey to the Indian Territory was difficult and deadly. Thousands died along the way of exposure, starvation, and disease. Now, there is no single Trail of Tears from the southeast to the Indian Territories, which today is Oklahoma. That name refers to the event itself. The Trail of Tears consists of numerous routes across this section of our country. The Choctaw were the first people who were moved to Oklahoma. And then, 16 years after that relocation, in 1847, as the Choctaw were still struggling to rebuild their lives in this strange new place, an outsider attended one of their tribal meetings. And this man, this outsider, came to them representing the Memphis Irish Relief Committee. He read a letter from this committee. The committee was soliciting donations to assist the people of Ireland. Why Ireland? Well, because 1847 marked the second year of the Irish potato famine, known in Ireland as the Great Hunger.
There is no
in Ireland at that time, the subsistence farmers relied on potatoes for their survival. But starting in 1845, a fungus-like organism invaded and destroyed the potato crops across the country. Eventually, 1 million residents of Ireland would die of starvation and related causes. The Choctaw knew all too well about starvation in harsh conditions. They remembered being driven from their homes by U.S. soldiers and forcibly marched
Irish
to Oklahoma.
They
lost thousands of their people on that journey. The Choctaw answered the plea of the Irish people. Anonymous individuals pledged a total of $170. Now, that doesn't sound like much to us, but adjusting for inflation today, that would equal about $5,000, which is a monumental amount of money for an impoverished community to donate to a people that they had never met. The Choctaw gave so that other people might have food to live. Our reading for today from the closing chapter of the Gospel of John is also about feeding the hungry. Now, if you'll recall, last week we looked at the account of Peter and the other disciples fishing on the Sea of Galilee. They had been in Jerusalem, but Jesus had been executed. But then 3 days later, he appeared to his followers who were gathered in a locked house. Jesus conferred upon his followers the power of the Holy Spirit and commissioned them to go out into the world to forgive sins. But they didn't. Peter and at least six of the other disciples, they went to Galilee, which was the home for some of them before they had met Jesus. And they just went back and returned to their old job of fishing. And as we read, they caught nothing. But then Jesus appeared on the beach and suggested they fish on the other side of the boat. They do and haul in a net bursting with fish. They go to Jesus on the beach and he feeds them breakfast. As we read today, when they had finished their breakfast, Jesus turns to Simon Peter and he poses a question. He asks, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Now, first of all, it's interesting that Jesus uses Peter's legal name here. Peter is just a nickname. It means rock. Today, we would probably call him Rocky. But Jesus employs Peter's full name as if to remind us that Jesus knows exactly who Peter is. Earlier in John's gospel, Peter describes the relationship between a shepherd and the sheep. He says, "The shepherd calls his own sheep by name, and they follow him." Jesus calls Peter by name, asking if he loves him more than these. Unfortunately, we don't know what "these" refers to. We can't see what Jesus was pointing at. Our first assumption is that Jesus is asking Peter if he loves him more than he loves these disciples, the others who were there with them. But I've always thought that was a rather harsh thing for Jesus to ask. It's like a parent asking one of their children, "Do you love me more than you love your brothers and sisters?" Instead, I like to think that Jesus is pointing at the boat and the fishing nets, and he's asking if Peter loves him more than he loves his old way of life, you know, before he met Jesus. Peter responds to this question, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." So Jesus tells him, "Feed my lambs." And this simple command, these three words, they mark Peter's transition from being a fisherman to becoming the shepherd of Jesus' people. That account of the disciples catching that net full of fish is commonly regarded as an evangelism story. Jesus showing his disciples how to bring people to the faith and how rich the offering is out there of people. But we know that there's more to it than just that. You can't catch fish in a net and then drag the net up on the beach and forget about them. They'll die and rot and become a huge stink. You can't invite people to Christ and then ignore them. They need to be cared for like sheep. They need a shepherd to guide and protect them, to provide them with spiritual nourishment. They come to Christ because they are hungry.
That is why Jesus commands Peter to feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. Three times Jesus puts that question to Peter, do you love me? And each time Peter says, yes. But the third time Peter gets, well, he gets a bit testy because Jesus keeps asking him the same question. I find it enlightening that Jesus repeats this question three times because doing so magnifies the significance of that question. What if every major inquiry in our lives were repeated like that? What would it be like? For example, I've got some weddings on the calendar coming up in the fall. What if in those weddings, I pose the marriage question three times? What if I ask the groom, do you take this woman to be your wife? And the first time he would say, yes, of course, you know, just like she had instructed him to do. But the second time he might say, yes, a bit more forcefully because, well, he'd already said it once. And the third time he might say, hey, I've answered you twice now. Why don't you believe me? And it's that third time that underscores the magnitude of the question, that this is important. In Peter's case, the thrice spoken question brings to mind his own behavior just a few days earlier when he was asked if he was associated with that man, Jesus. And three times he is asked, and three times Peter denies knowing Jesus. When Jesus then asks Peter, do you love me? There is an element of forgiveness accompanying that question. Jesus knows Peter. He knows what he's done, and yet he forgives. And not only does he forgive, but he charges Peter with shepherding his sheep, a most vital occupation. And as we know, Peter goes on to become a great shepherd of the church. Roman Catholics regard Peter as the first pope, and I won't argue with them on that. Peter became the head of the church in Jerusalem. He preached tirelessly, telling the story of Jesus to all people. He organized and administrated the growing movement of believers. And as Jesus had instructed him, he fed people. Literally, Peter initiated a fund to help the widows and the orphans in Jerusalem. And Christian missionaries around the world, including the Apostle Paul at the time, collected money for this fund and delivered it back to Jerusalem where it could help people. Peter kept his word to Jesus. He fed and cared for Jesus' flock. Back on that beach in Galilee, after asking the question three times, then Jesus tells a sort of parable. He tells Jesus, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go. On first reading, it sounds like Jesus is describing anyone's life. When we are young, we put on our clothes and do what we want. When we get old, others will dress us and guide us around. But Jesus is speaking specifically here to Peter. And Peter, as tradition tells us, was, like Jesus, crucified. This statement from Jesus It's a warning that following Jesus involves sacrifice and possibly even death. For Peter, it won't be a belt, but a chain that will be tied around his waist. And with this chain, he will be led to his death, a place he does not want to go. And his arms will be stretched out on a cross. Despite all this, Jesus then invites Peter, saying, "Follow me." And Peter does follow Jesus, and he becomes a leader of those who also follow Christ. Peter cared for and fed the sheep. Remember that story about the Choctaw people sending money to Ireland in 1847 to feed the hungry there? Well, there's more to it. Today, Native Americans, especially those on reservations, have been hit especially hard by the COVID pandemic. Their suffering is higher than average because of the health factors associated with their poverty. Many of them live in close quarters with multiple generations in the same house. They have limited access to health care. They disproportionately suffer from health issues such as obesity, diabetes, asthma, and heart disease. This makes them targets for the ravages of the coronavirus. And so, to assist Native Americans, a special fund has been established for families in the Hopi and Navajo reservations in Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico. Can you guess who is stepping up with massive donations? The Irish. They remember. They remember the generosity of the Native Americans from two centuries ago. And so far, 24,000 donors from Ireland have contributed over $800,000 to the Native Americans in their time of need. Today, in our country, with an unemployment rate of 14.7% and projected to hit 25% pretty soon, we can expect to confront difficult economic times for many years. And as a church, as a congregation, we are going to need to consider seriously Jesus' injunction to feed his sheep. There are going to be people who need nourishment, not only for their souls, but for their bodies as well. We are already seeing the newly unemployed having to line up for food. And this is going to continue for some time. The food lines are going to get longer. Jesus continues to call to his followers and his disciples. They should feed his sheep. And we as a church will need to respond. Amen.